Hello everyone and welcome to J Talk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor and joining me this week to review all of the J2 action is John Steele. Hi John, how are you?
Hi James, good morning. Yes, recovered from COVID and fighting fit.
Good, glad to hear that. Let's get stuck in then, shall we? Let's get underway with a game at the top of the table featuring the Yokohama FC and Vanfore Kofu. This one, there was one goal in it and it came in the 85th minute. For Yokohama FC, Tatsuya Hasegawa crossed from the left and Koki Ogawa headed in for his 21st goal of the season, which means that Yokohama FC stay in second. Kofu are somewhere way down the table, I can't even remember where, winless in eight league games. John, you were at this one. Have you dried out and how was it?
The weather was not the best, and I tried to persuade my son desperately to watch this at home on DAZN instead, but he's gone hardcore, James. He wants to sit behind the goal with the ultras, so that's what we did, and he likes to sit as close to the drums as possible as well, so I think my eardrums have probably just about stopped reverberating as well, so. But he had a good time, and that's the main thing, isn't it? So, it was weird. Perhaps not a weird game. It's typical Yokohama FC performance of like they kind of sort of toil quite a lot, and you never really the first half especially they looked a bit nervous, a bit ponderous. I think this is probably because they'd lost the game at Yamagata last midweek, and so they really needed, obviously Okayama closed that gap between second and third to just a couple of points. So I think Yokohama FC, they very keenly felt that they needed to win this game. But in the first half, they didn't show many signs of being able to do that. I think Marcelo Hian, the new Brazilian striker, he hit the post in about the 10th minute. Mm-hmm. But that was as close as they came to getting a goal in the first half. The second half was a bit better. The game sort of opened up and Yokohama sort of, as much as a Shuhei Yamada team can, I think they went for it. Which might not have been evident to anybody watching on TV, but trust me, they did. They did up the tempo a little bit in the second half, and then Hasegawa, that kind of hotline of his sort of deep crosses to the back post for Ogawa. They tried one, which Ogawa didn't quite get right, and he headed straight at the goalkeeper. But then, 5 minutes from the end, they had another go, and this time it paid off, and Ogawa headed in. It was almost the same goal they scored against Gunma at home a couple of matches ago, and they won 1-0. That goal came early. Then Yokohama FC shut up shop and won 1-0. This time the goal came late, but the result was the same. And just one quick nod as well to Sven Brodersen, who right after the goal, he had to make a good save from William Lira after Motoki Hasegawa had sent him clean through. So I don't know if there's too much to choose between the teams, but Yokohama FC got the ball in the net once and Kofu didn't. And then, Sven Brodersen made that really good save at the end. So I think you'd have to say on balance it was just about a deserved win for Yokohama. And I think, I don't know what you think about this, but that puts them, 5 points clear of Okayama with five games to go. You'd imagine they're actually going to grind out and hold on for second place. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they probably will. I mean, Okayama are doing really, really well. But Yokohama, I mean, we've said it before, they seem to be able to get points and get results even when they're not playing well, and it seems like they haven't really been playing well for most of the season, which means perhaps we need to recalibrate our expectations of what they should be doing. But they are second. They're only 3 points behind Niigata. They're 5 points clear of Okayama, which is good. They'll be pleased with this. I guess you said they were maybe a bit nervous, and I hadn't realized they were on a three-game winless run going into this one. Two draws and a loss. And with Okayama doing so well, they probably were starting to look over their shoulders a bit. But I think from the highlights, I only saw the highlights of this one, but it did seem fairly even. I know, Yokohama hit the post in the first half, but Kofu seemed to have a fairly decent attacking display, except for the finishing. Their chances, they were wasteful in front of goal. And I think that is part of the reason why they are all the way down. I just looked, it's 16th. And it's 16th. They've lost their last four. Before that, they drew four. So they've 8 games without win. Their league season petered out long ago. They're still in the cup, which is great. But, I mean, this, I would have to say this has been a disappointing year for them. because we come to expect them finishing fifth, don't we? So this is it's a bit unlike them, I suppose, and surprising perhaps, because they do have quite a talented squad, or at least in attack they've got talent. William Lira and Hasegawa and Torika are all particularly good. But yeah, I don't know, for them it's been a letdown, isn't it? But Yokohama FC, I think, will probably go up automatically. If they can keep grinding out, there's five games left, they've got to keep grinding it out. And I feel like Koki Ogawa hasn't scored for a while, so it's nice to see him get on the score sheet. He's already got 21 goals, which is excellent. And that's a big part of why they're able to kind of get these 1-0s, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think the league table would look very, very different if he hadn't scored 21 goals. Cause I'm not sure who else. I'm not sure if that gap could have been filled by anybody else. That's true.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So Yokohama 1, Kofu 0. Let's move on to the second game then, shall we? This one was Akita against Gunma, and this one also only had one goal in it. This one, the goal was for Gunma. In the 17th minute, there was a cross from the left, which a Gunma striker headed. The header was blocked. He had a shot. The shot was blocked, but it fell to Toshiya Tanaka, standing just a few yards out. He was able to tap it in. And that was it. Gunma 1, Akita 0. Huge result for Gunma. John, what can you tell us about this one?
Yeah, I think this is one of those pleasing games where both teams had a name with five letters when you write them in English, which for some reason does something for me. Now, because I've opened with that, it probably makes it sound like I wasn't very interested in the game, but I was. I think I agree, it's huge win for Gunma, as you pointed out. I think in my notes, I've written that they kind of did an Akita to Akita here, sort of kind of classic 1-0 away smash and grab. I think the goal that came in the 17th minute, as you mentioned, it felt a bit like an Akita goal, because it was kind of forced over the line at close range, by Toshiya Tanaka, as you said. But after that, Gunma showed some really sort of valiant defending, if you like. I think Koji Yamada was in goal, wasn't he, for Gunma? This is only a third appearance for them. And I think Kushibiki was on the bench, so they've obviously dropped, or they've rotated goalkeepers at a critical time in the season and brought in this rookie goalkeeper. That seemed like a bit of a gamble to me, but it's paying off. But Yamada, he did make a mistake in the first half when he came out. You know, goalkeepers sometimes just come out to the edge of the 18-yard box to punch across. I'm never sure why they do that. But he got it wrong, and the ball was headed on target. But Yuzo Iwakami was on hand, and he headed it off the goal line. At the start of the second half, Gunma had some luck again. Ryota Nakamura, he headed headed the ball against the crossbar. Then there's a goal line scramble and another good clearance online. This time, I think it was Yuta Fuji for Gunma who got the ball away. And there was one more big scramble right at the end. And it's what we liked, isn't it? Goalkeepers coming up for corners in the last minute. Yudai Kaneko was up there. And I think he might even have got contact on the ball. He was certainly in the thick of things. But the ball was cleared and Gunma held on. And they're unbeaten in four games now, aren't they? I think it's three draws in a row, and then this away win and a clean sheet keeps them 3 points clear of Iwate and the relegation zone. And you're starting to feel that they might just escape. I think they've made some big calls in terms of team selection. I mentioned the goalkeeper Yamada coming in, but also I think the two strikers they started with here are both on loan, aren't they? Recent additions, Kunitomo Suzuki and Ryo Kawamoto from Okayama. So, you know, they've moved the team around, and Hajime Hosogai's been fit for the last couple of months and come in. I think he's been a kind of good steady influence in central midfield. So, yeah, I've started to get a feeling that by hook or by crook, they might just get out of trouble this year. I don't know what you think, James.
That's what I was thinking as well. I mean, they seem to do just enough to survive every year, don't they? And which we talked about it pre-season, or maybe it was the end of last season. Like, what's the aim of their club? And it seems like the aim is to survive, and they're doing just enough to keep their heads above water. And now they've opened up a 3-point gap to Iwate, which is going to be, they'll be very pleased about that. And psychologically, it could be a huge boost for them as well. And yeah, you could see how committed they were in the defending, what the goal line clearance you mentioned, and then the two shots blocked after the crossbar. The players throwing themselves in front of the shots to try and block them, which you don't always see. A lot of teams down the bottom, sometimes they don't have that kind of what's the word? They don't have the energy to do it because they're just worn down by having had such a tough season and things not going their way. But Gumma really were going for it. And yeah, they had some luck, but sometimes you need a bit of luck as well as your good performance. And for Akita, they're in 15th, they got 43 points, they're 10 points clear of relegation. I think this probably counts as a reasonable season for them. I think they're perhaps not going to finish as high as last year. I can't remember where they finished last year, but they're solidifying in the second tier, which is good, because quite often we see teams come up, have a good first year, and then really struggle in the second year. They're doing all right, and I think they'll be fine. They're quite inconsistent, but not dreadful. Inconsistency is better than being consistently rubbish.
that's next season's slogan sorted.
Yeah, that's my my
not dreadful.
my life philosophy. the team selections for Gumma are interesting. I think with Kushibiki, he's a few kind of high profile mistakes over the last month or so, and although he's still making good saves, he's making those good saves after he's conceded a goal of his own making. So I think, yeah, it's perhaps a bold call to drop or maybe rest, I don't know, the goalie at this stage. But you know, sometimes when you're in this situation, you have to make bold calls. If sticking with the same 11 doesn't work, you have to change things. And so I think the manager deserves credit for making that decision. And also Koji Yamada deserves a lot of credit for coming in and keeping a clean sheet, getting the 3 points. So yeah, now they're 3 points clear, 3 draws and a win. They've only lost one in their last 6, Gumma. This is pretty good. If they can keep picking up points and keep hoping that Iwate lose, then they'll be fine. Which is all they need, really, isn't it? All right, so that's 2 1-0s. Let's go for another 1-0, shall we, John? This one, Ryukyu against Yamaguchi. Ryukyu lost this one 1-0. The goal was in the 74th minute. Yamaguchi took a short corner. The original taker passed it, obviously, to someone and then ran into loads of space. No one followed him. And then he had plenty of time to pass to Kensuke Sato, who himself had loads of time in the area to shoot, from about 10 yards. That was the only goal of the game. Leaves Ryukyu now 3 points adrift, 6 points from safety. And Yamaguchi jump up to 14th. They're on 43 points, 10 points clear of relegation. John, what can you tell us about this game?
I think you're obviously correct to say that this game finished 1-0, but I'm still not sure how, because there were loads of chances, especially in the first half. We should mention the kind of, I'm not sure if it was pre-typhoon or post-typhoon or mid-typhoon, but it's rainy and windy at the stadium. I don't think that helped, especially for the goalkeepers. And I think, just looking at the way Ryukyu started this game, the first 50 minutes, it did have that feel of like a must-win game for them, didn't it, down at the bottom. I think just inside the first couple of minutes, the Yamaguchi keeper, Kentaro Seki, he had to dive very bravely at the feet of Sadam Sule. And then there was a good header from Ryo Omori that Seki had to palm over the crossbar as well. So Ryukyu kind of really went for it early on. At the other end, as I mentioned, it was rainy, it was slippy, and Ryukyu's keeper, Danny Carvajal, he spilled across at the feet of, luckily it dropped to Tsubasa Umeki, Carvajal was able to save that, and then Kazuma Takai crashed the follow-up over the crossbar, and before half-time, Carvajal was busy again. He had to make a close-range double save from Umeki to keep things at 0-0. But then, yeah, I think we need to talk about that that goal in the 74th minute, because for as well as Ryukyu competed, you know, mentally and physically in this game, it was just a really I mean, the coach must be so frustrated with how they've conceded that goal, because you mentioned it's a short corner where Rukiu have got loads of players back in their own 6-yard box, in their own 18-yard box. Nobody's switched on. Nobody's paying attention. It's much too easy for Georgie Ikigami, the corner kick taker, to get the ball back. And then not only is he completely free to kind of waltz to the byline, but when he cuts the ball back, Kensuke Sato, again, is completely free. So what's the point of having 8 or 9 players back in your own penalty area to defend a corner if none of them are in the right place? So I think it's that's symptomatic of how the season's gone for Ryukyu in terms of goals they've conceded. They've competed well in games. They've done really well. And they had that big bounce, didn't they, initially when Nacho Fernandez came in. But defending like that, I mean, how much can you sort of complain or bemoan kind of bad luck or, you know, misfortune when you're sort of the architects of your own downfall? And when the full-time whistle went, Ryukyu looked, the players looked pretty glum. And I think, 6 points from safety with 5 games to go. I would say they probably need 3 wins minimum, don't they? Maybe even 4 from the last 5 games. But they only have 2 home games left, and they're against Yokohama, who are 2nd, Oita, who are 6th, and then, you know, the 3 games away from home. If they can pull it off, it will be the greatest of great escapes. But I'm not, it doesn't give me any pleasure to say, but I'm not particularly confident they're going to do it. I don't know if you'd agree with that, James.
Yeah, I mean, they need results. They need their own results to go their way, and they need other results to go their way. And at the moment, neither of those things is happening. They're losing while the likes of Gunma are winning and Omiya are winning. And although Iwate are not really winning, they need more than losing 1-0 at home to Yamaguchi. And they haven't scored for 5 games now, Ryukyu, which went after that. They had a really good run. Like you mentioned, after Fernandez took over, and they were scoring a lot of goals. They were conceding a lot as well, but they were picking up points. They were winning and drawing. They were unbeaten for sort of 5 games, or they had 1 loss in 5 or something like that. They were playing really well. They seemed to have a lot of confidence, a bit gung-ho. They were going for it. And then suddenly everything's changed, and now they can't score. And they had a few chances. And yes, Kenta Roseki made some really good saves because he's an excellent goalie. But they still didn't convince going forward. And I think it's because Takuma Abe is not there. I think I might be misremembering, but I think Ryukyu's good run coincided with Abe coming back to fitness. And now he's injured again, and they're back on a bad run. And although Yuki Kusano has come back, who was their only scorer for the first part of the season, and he got injured for a long time, he's not managed to score yet. And I think perhaps that's because he was missing for so long. And he's got a new strike partner in Sule to try and figure things out with. And something's not working. I think when we get to the end of the season, where there's plenty we can talk about with things that have gone wrong at Ryukyu. And it's mostly going to be off the field stuff, I think. It's a very slim hope, isn't it? I think it's going to happen, unfortunately, but you never know. But as I mentioned, Seki, he was good. Carvajal, of course, was good as well. We know Carvajal is good. He's been excellent since he came back into the side.
Well, I think Ryukyu are going to get relegated with like the best 3 goalkeepers. You know, if they can keep all 3 of those goalkeepers next season in J3, they'll have the best roster of goalkeepers ever, I think, in J3. You could Carvajal, Taguchi, and is Inose, the third choice. Yeah. They're all really good. But then again, they're often in the limelight, aren't they? Because they're making a lot of saves when they play. So,
yeah. Well, last season that the league leader for saves was Seki at Yamaguchi, and that's because the defense in front is not particularly strong. This year, league leader for saves is Yuto Shirai at Kanazawa, because he's constantly busy because the defense in front is rubbish a lot of the time. And unfortunately, the same is true of Ryukyu. Defence is is really poor, and that's the reason they lost this one, because they switched off at a crucial moment. A set piece, a corner, is when you should be really concentrating. You know where the ball's going to come from. You know who you're supposed to be marking or where you're supposed to be standing to cover any opponents who come into your zone. So why is everyone just standing around watching those three guys pass it between themselves in acres of space? It's ridiculous. And that's the sort of thing that I get the feeling that no matter how much time you spend on the training ground working on defending set pieces, there's only so much the manager can do. The manager can't go onto the pitch and tell players, you need to move over there now, and ask the opponents to hang on, stop. I need to tell this guy where he's got to run now. But I bet he wishes he could, or at the very least bang a few heads together, because like you said, there's only five games left and they need to win most of them to stand a chance. And at the moment, it does not look like that's going to happen. Yeah. Whereas for Yamaguchi, unbeaten in four now, all the way up in 14th. They're leaving it kind of late, same as usual, but they're pulling away to safety now, and they might end up finishing kind of high up the table, really, which is good for them.
I'll just add, just real quickly, I forget is it Yoshihiro, the manager? Yamaguchi, Mr. Natsuka. I think he's been quietly impressive this season. After being a kind of underwhelming appointment, one of these guys that was the number two, just being promoted when the sort of initial manager was sacked, I think he might have done enough to interest a few clubs a bit higher up the food chain this winter. Mm-hmm. And I think one or two teams are going to be disappointed in the playoff hunt, aren't they? Perhaps more than a couple. And Jeff are going to be looking for a new manager. Kofu might decide they want to start from scratch. I wouldn't be surprised if his name isn't in the conversation, because I think he's been really impressive. Or if we, as we expect, Akiba moves on from Mito, perhaps that might be. I'm not sure if Yamaguchi to Mito is a step up, but I think Natsuka has been quietly impressive presence on the touchline for Yamaguchi all season, really.
I've said it before, Yamaguchi, they tend to slip under my radar. I don't know why, but they've been quietly impressive. Particularly recently, as they start to kind of move up a little bit, and I like the way they play. They do quite aggressive pressing, not in terms of fouling people, but in terms of putting pressure on the opposition and forcing them to hurry and stuff. And it's quite good to watch. I think they've got quite a decent style, and that's obviously the manager's style. And I think that would be interesting to see, who, if anyone, comes in and tries to get him away from Yamaguchi during the winter. It's an interesting shout. All right, we've done 3-1 nils. So in JTET tradition, we're going to talk about a 3-3 now as a bonus fourth game, Zegen Kanazawa against Oita Trinita. There's plenty of action in this one. And in the fifth minute, Kanazawa took the lead. A pass from Kyohei Sugiura to Hiroya Matsumoto on the edge of the Oita area. Matsumoto turned and shot into the bottom corner to put Kanazawa ahead. But in the 26th minute, Mu Kanazaki equalised for Oita. And just before halftime, Kanazawa retook the lead. A Sugiura cross from the left was flicked on by Masamichi Hayashi to Ryuhei Oishi at the back post. He controlled it and shot through a defender's legs to make it 2-1 at halftime. And then 6 minutes into the second half, Kanazawa made it 3-1. Sugiura again involved. He converted a penalty after a ball hit a defender's raised arm. So 3-1 with 40 minutes to go, and Kanazawa looking good. But unfortunately, Oita pulled one back in the 72nd minute when Pereira outjumped Keita Fujimura at the corner. And then 5 minutes later, it was 3-3. Musaki Yumiba had loads of space in the area after a pass from the right wing. So it finished Kanazawa 3, Oita 3. That's just the goals. There was plenty of other stuff to talk about. John, go for it.
I think it's right and proper that we finish with a more kind of typical J3 encounter. rather than all these kind of 1-0 games, James. Yeah, this game had pretty much everything apart from a red card, as far as I remember. I think it was pretty much everything else. I think before we get to the good stuff, Oita in sixth, so they're right in the thick of the playoff chase, aren't they? And Cannizzaro, I mean, you might have something to say about this in a moment, but I think they might be 17th, but this keeps them 9 points clear of the relegation zone, and I think that's enough, and that they can more or less relax now and start thinking about next season. But yeah, as you mentioned, perfect start. I think that first sort of 15 or 20 minutes is the best I've seen Cannizzaro play for a long time. Hiroyo Matsumoto put them in front. I think Ryuhei Oishi hit the post, didn't he, with a shot that got the goalkeeper, yep, got a good touch on that, so could have been 2-0. Kyohei Sugiura also had a pretty fierce drive, beaten away in that opening spell as well, so it could have been better than 1-0 early on. But I knew I was watching Kanazawa, James, so when they were on top, I was just waiting for the sort of soft equaliser from Oita, and it came with that Mu Kanazaki tap in after some pretty good approach play from Yuto Misao and Eduardo Neto. But as you mentioned, I think for Kanazawa, they had the kind of goal just before half time and just after, right? Good finish from Oishi, although he was allowed to have sort of as many touches as he wanted inside the penalty. Mm. I think he had five or six touches before anybody got close enough to close him down. So that was 2-1. And then, yeah, I think it was Pereira, the ball hit Pereira's arm for the penalty right at the start of the second half. So at 3-1, I guess you were at this game, you were probably feeling pretty confident, but you can never relax really when you're supporting Cannizzaro, can you? And then Pereira had that bullet header to kind of make amends for the penalty and make it 3-2, and then Cannizzaro could only hold on for another 5 minutes, and it was 3-3. I thought it was a bit too easy for Kenta Inoue to kind of wriggle free inside the penalty on the right, and he cut the ball back for Yumi Bat, and I think he didn't make good contact with the ball, but somehow it ended up, just the momentum of the game was going that way, wasn't it? It ended up going in. And then suddenly the pendulum swung and Kanazawa kind of hanging on, and you sort of felt if the game had gone on for another 5 or 10 minutes, or Oita might have scored again and won 4-3. But I think that would have been incredibly harsh on Kanazawa for the effort they put into the game. So 3-3 was a entertaining and a fair result, I think. We'll just give a quick shout out for Motoaki Miura, the Kanazawa goalkeeper. I think this was his first appearance in the league since joining. I thought he was really good overall. And yeah, good stuff. Kanazawa more or less safe, and Oita unbeaten in five. And I'm still not sure they're a particularly good team, but they might be in the kind of form that does get them into the playoffs at the end of the season. So James, I think for Kanazawa, I better let you have a go as well.
Yeah, well, a fantastic first sort of 55, 60 minutes from Kanazawa, apart from that soft goal that Oita scored to equalise in 26th minute. But, I mean, great stuff for Motoaki Miura, his first league start for Kanazawa. He played in the two cup games earlier this year. He was outstanding against Nagoya and only conceded a penalty. We lost that one 1-0. Made some really good saves here. I think his kicking distribution needs some work, but he did pretty well, I thought, and he was quite decisive coming for crosses and things like that, and coming to cut off balls behind the defence and things like that. So I think he could be fairly pleased with his performance, and I don't think he was to blame for any of the goals, because they were all the same typical Kanazawa defensive failings and the same players involved. For the first one, Shoji was covering the player with, I can't remember who had the ball, and then Son came across to cover him, so no one was covering Kanazaki. Fujimura had stopped running just outside the area, as he always seems to. I don't know if he's told to do that, or if he just can't be bothered, or if he's scared of going into his own area. And Nagamine was too slow to come across from left back, which meant Kanazaki had a tap in. For the second one, Fujimura was out jumped, which happens a lot. And for the third one, Son and Nagamine were both over on the left wing, and neither of them could deal with the guy who had the ball, which meant that the scorer had plenty of time and space. So, yeah, those the goals conceded, disappointing. And I think the reason why Kanazawa just kind of couldn't carry on after the hour, I think, is fatigue. I think it hit a wall. Because this was the fifth game in quick succession, doing weekend, midweek, weekend, midweek, weekend. And because of a rearranged game before the Nagasaki game. But for that first hour, Kanazawa were excellent. They started really strongly again. And that goal from Matsumoto, I was at the other end from us. And I thought it was Hayashi at first, because Hayashi scored a few like that. He's got that brilliant turn. But it was Matsumoto, the midfielder. He scored five goals now, four in his last seven, which is excellent. Kyohei Sugiura was involved in all three goals. That first pass for Matsumoto, there's a few times he's done that this year, for laying it off for Hayashi, or laying it off for someone to score, or for Oishi to score, or something like that. He put in the cross for the second, he scored the penalty for the third. He was making loads of really good runs, stretching the defence and things like that, trying to get in behind. Oishi was excellent again. Oishi has been really good this year. I'm really pleased that he's been given a long go in the starting 11. For the first half of the year, he was coming off the bench. Now he's been able to start, and he's been really good both ends of the pitch. So I was happy to see him get a goal as well. And yeah, I thought that actually the centre-back pairing, Son and Shoji, did fairly well for the most part. They kept Samuel very quiet, and they kept Kanazaki quiet most of the time. Quiet in terms of his impact on the game, not quiet in terms of him moaning to the referee, because Son was going in quite hard on him and he didn't like it. So he spent a lot of time sort of flouncing about and flailing his arms at the ref, which is quite funny. And the Oita were very disappointing in that first hour, but I guess the reason why they're up in the playoff picture is because they can get results like this, and they're unbeaten in five. And that's an important point, I think, for them, especially with Yamagata winning to keep pace with them, but Nagasaki losing. So it gives them a little bit of breathing room over at least one of their rivals for sixth. And just on Kanazawa, this five-game run, they had a win, three draws and a loss, which is a massive improvement on the previous five games, which was five losses by huge margins. So, yeah, I'm not sure I would be as confident as you in terms of thinking that we're safe, but things are looking much more positive than they were a month ago. And this weekend's game away to Iwate could be the one that secures safety, really. But I think, yeah, the defence, Kanazawa's defence, really needs work in the off-season. And I don't know if that means another coaching overhaul, or if it means a new manager, or if it just means another overhaul of the playing staff. Because we don't have bad defenders. They're good players. But yeah, something's not working, because we're conceding three goals every game.
Yoshihiro Natsuka is quite good at organising a defense.
Well, so is Akiba this year as well, actually.
Yes.
But I don't think he'd come to Kanazawa.
Real quick on Kanazawa, just off the pitch, I think they launched their crowd campaign for the new stadium and absolutely smashed it. Can you hear about that?
Yeah, so on Friday night they announced crowdfunding of 10 million, a target, 10 million yen. For the new stadium that's being built in Kanazawa, which will be Zegen's home stadium when it opens in 2024. And by Sunday afternoon, they'd reached that target, and they're way over target. They're still going really well. But it's donations through the Furusato Nose, the kind of hometown tax donation scheme that Japan has. But yeah, I was really pleased. The stadium looks really, really good. Just from the artist's impressions, I'm really pleased that I'm kind of surprised as well that the target was met so quickly, because if you look at Kanazawa's attendances, we don't seem to have many supporters. So I'm not sure if it was just those few people donating loads of money, or if it's coming from other places as well, or, you know, but it's great. And it suggests that there is a market for Zegen. If the club can access it. And I know they're trying really hard to get more people to come to the games, and they're coming up with lots of you know, promotional ideas and things like that. So I hope that this is just another positive step on the road to growing the club. But yeah, I was really surprised and really pleased to see that they reached the target in such a short amount of time.
Yeah,
let's finish on that positive.
After my experience on Sunday, just staring at photos of a stadium with a roof is enough to make me burst into tears with relief. So yeah, I'll donate some money if I can as well.
Yeah, but what's funny about it is the away end is uncovered. for the real Rain City boys, welcome, I think.
yeah, you can have nice things, but not 100% nice things. That's the rule.
Well, if you want nice things in Kanazawa, go and have gold leaf ice cream or something like that. But if you're going to come and watch the football, you're going to get wet. You'll take the 3 points, but you'll get wet doing it. Well, it's not. It reminds me of. It's going off topic a bit, but it reminds me of the rugby ground at Headingley in Leeds. That's got 3 covered stands, and the away end is uncovered. And over the last sort of 20 years, they have renovated 3 of the stands for various reasons, like because they were old or whatever. But they haven't renovated the west, not the west, the south. Can't remember what it is now. The away end, anyway. And the reason for that is because there's a public footpath behind it, so they're not allowed to do any work there. I don't think that's the case at Kanazawa. I think they're trying to save money or make it more of a, I don't know, Fortress Kanazawa kind of thing. But
well, I feel like any aliens that visit our planet will take away the idea that stadium roofs are like the most expensive item, because so few stadiums have them. Like they'd be like, oh, the humans' like most revered currency isn't actually gold, it's just like roofs for stadiums. so like how much can these things actually cost? It's like anyway, I'm also off way off topic, but yes. Roofs for all, that's my message.
I think it's time to take a break, isn't it? All right, let's go calm down and get our heads on straight, and I'll be back in a minute to round up the rest of the weekend's action. Let's take a look at the rest of the weekend's games, starting with league leaders Albirex Niigata, who saw off Mito Hollyhock 2-0. Niigata had the better of the early running, with Kaito Taniguchi heading onto the crossbar and Ryotaro Ito seeing his shot well saved by Louis Yamaguchi inside the first 10 minutes. Yamaguchi was at full stretch in the 18th minute to deny Ito again, and Niigata eventually scored in the 37th minute when Ito laid the ball off to Taniguchi, and he passed to Yuji Hoshi, waiting just inside the area, to fire a shot into the top right corner. Mito almost equalised on the stroke of half-time, but Fumiya Sugiura's free kick came back off the post, and the rebounds were blocked by a couple of defenders. Niigata got their second 7 minutes after the break. A Mito attack broke down on the edge of the Niigata area. Ito played it wide to Taniguchi, and he was fouled as he held the ball up to wait for support. The resulting free kick was met at the near post by Taniguchi, and his header somehow went straight through Yamaguchi. Niigata maintained their 3-point lead over Yokohama FC, while Mito are safely in 12th. Fajiano Okayama and Vivar in Nagasaki played out an entertaining and somewhat feisty encounter on Saturday night. The first chance of the game came immediately, a deflected Han Aeguan shot that hit the crossbar for Okayama after 15 seconds. Midway through the first half, there were several incidents in quick succession. First, there was a coming together between Nagasaki striker Clayson and Okayama's Yuji Wakasa, with no foul given either way. Then, an Okayama corner fell to Yuri Boyce, but his shot was tipped over by Masaya Tomizawa. Soon after, Clayson raised his leg in a half-hearted attempt to block a clearance by Wakasa, and as he turned his body away, he managed to kick Wakasa in the thigh, for which he was booked. Next, an Okayama attack down the right saw Boyce attack across by leading with his forearm, which smashed into a Nagasaki defender's face. No card given for the sort of tackle that would be a red card even in a rugby league match. And while the player was receiving treatment, Clayson kicked the ball so that it hit the referee on the knee and got himself a second yellow card. All this in the space of about 3 minutes. Nagasaki did have a chance to take the lead in the 38th minute, but Edgar Jr. missed from a few yards out.
And then Nagasaki's Hijiri Kato was penalised for handball in the 4th minute of stoppage time, and Bice scored the penalty. Thiago Alves made it 2-0 in the 70th minute as he shoved Kazuki Kushibiki in the back to prevent him getting to a long ball over the top, and then lobbed the onrushing Tomizawa. Wakasa thought he made it 3 a couple of minutes later, but the goal was ruled out for offside, although I couldn't see anyone in an offside position. But the third goal did come in the 75th minute, when Mitchell Duke was allowed to rise unchallenged at the back post to head in. 3-0 the final score, so Okayama are 5 points behind Yokohama FC and 5 ahead of Kumamoto. Nagasaki are 8th. Kumamoto's game against Iwate was moved from Monday to Tuesday because of the typhoon, but the delay didn't stop the home side from extending their unbeaten run to 5 games with a 1-0 win. Now Hiro Sugiyama's 7th goal of the season was the difference, and it came in the 11th minute when he curled a left-footed shot from cutting in from the right. Iwate protested that Yuhi Takemoto, who dummied the ball on the edge of the 6-yard box, was offside, but to no avail. Iwate almost equalised in the 41st minute. Cristiano's hooked volley hit the crossbar, and then again a minute later when Yohei Okuyama hit the post. Iwate thought they really had levelled the game in the 82nd minute when Cristiano headed in a free kick, but he was judged to have been offside. Kumamoto had chances to put the game to bed, but wayward finishing and desperate defending kept them at bay. So Kumamoto stay 4th, while Iwate stay 21st. Vegalta Sendai against Tokushima Vortis finished 1-1, of course. Tokushima's Kazuki Nishiya had the ball in the net in the 26th minute, but was offside, so it was disallowed. And then in the 41st minute, Sendai went down to 10 men. Yasushi Endo was given a second yellow for a forearm to the face of an opponent. He didn't even look at the ball at all. He was more concerned with blocking the player coming from behind to challenge for a high pass. 3 minutes into the second half, Tokushima's man advantage paid off, as Kazunari Ichimi just about managed to bundle the ball into the net. The lead only lasted 8 minutes, and then a towering header from Takumi Mase levelled things up for Sendai. Sendai stay 5th, 2 points behind Kumamoto and 2 ahead of Oita. Tokushima are 9th, 5 points off 6th, and deserve a round of applause for their record-breaking 22nd draw. Just outside the playoff places in 7th, we have Montedio Yamagata, who overcame 10th place Jeff United Chiba 2-0. Taiki Kato scored the first, converting at the back post after a nice 1-2 between Ibuki Fujita and Riku Handa. Thiago De Leonzo had a golden opportunity to equalise just after the hour mark after a surging run out of defence by Chan Ming-yu, but his attempted lob went one-on-one with keeper Masagi Goto sailed high over the bar. Jeff were made to rue that miss in the 85th minute as Shuto Minami played in Ryonosuke Kabayama, and the substitute shot past Shota Arai to put the game to bed. Jeff aren't out of the playoff hunt yet, but they're 5 points off 6th place. 1 point below Jeff in 11th, Machida Zelvia, who drew 2-2 at home to Tokyo Verdy. The visitors went ahead after just 78 seconds. Ryoga Sato fluffed a chance, Koki Morita had a shot saved, and Daiki Fukazawa scored the rebound. Machida drew level in the 11th minute when Kazuma Yamaguchi flicked on a cross for Yuki Nakashima to convert at the back post. The home side took the lead 3 minutes into the second half. Yamaguchi's powerful shot was tipped onto the bar by Matthias, but from the resulting corner, Shusuke Ota headed in from 12 yards. This game was far from over, however. Machida had conceded 15 goals in the final 15 minutes of games, while Verdy had scored 17 in the same period of matches going into this game, and so, in the 95th minute, Machida's Jun Okano handled a high ball while tussling with Boniface Nduka, and Toyofumi Sakono scored the penalty to salvage a point for Verdy. The last of the weekend's games saw Omiya Ardija take another step towards survival while prolonging Tochigi's anxiety with a 3-1 win at the NAC 5 Stadium. All 4 goals came in the second half. The first was scored by Omiya's Ryo Shinzato in the 58th minute. A high cross was nodded down by Hiroki Kurimoto for Shinzato to score. Then Aseya Nakano double. In the 62nd minute, Masato Kojima, Masaya Shibayama and Nakano played a neat passing triangle just inside the area. And then in the 73rd minute, Rin Yamazaki dribbled into the box and played Nakano in to get Omiya's third. Ryo Nemoto saw a low shot saved by Omiya keeper Ko Shimura, but he did pull one back for Tochigi in the 93rd minute, a header that bounced down off the crossbar and in off Shimura. Omiya moved 5 points clear of relegation in 19th, while Tochigi are 18th. Plus, there were 2 rearranged games on Wednesday the 21st. In the round 31 fixture, Tokyo Verdy picked up their first win in 9 games, 2-1 away to Mito Hollyhock. The visitors took the lead in the 21st minute. A quickly taken free kick in midfield was played through for Keito Kawamura to run onto. He squared, aiming for Junki Koike, but Mito keeper Kaiho Nakayama clawed it away before Koike could get to it. Unfortunately, it went straight to Toyofumi Sakano, who scored for the second game in a row. Mito were level soon after through Shoji Toyama, one of the stars of Gamba Osaka's under-23s in 2020, now something of a forgotten man. His low shot from the edge of the area nestled in the bottom left corner, his first goal of the season, and on his birthday too. Verdy won it with a late Ryoga Sato goal. Daiki Fukazawa crossed to the back post, where it was knocked down for Sato to chest in his 12th of the season. These teams are level on 46 points in 12th and 13th. The other rearranged game was the matchday 33 fixture between Nagasaki and Tochigi. Tochigi had a lot of shots in this one, but not many on target. They did take the lead in the 37th minute though, with a deflected Keita Ueda shot. Nagasaki drew level in the 64th minute when Asahi Uenaka just got his head to a high pass before Tochigi keeper Shuhei Kawata. Then in stoppage time, Nagasaki substitute Ryohei Yamazaki received a second yellow card for a studs-up tackle on Yuki Nishiya. Tochigi didn't have time to take advantage, and it ended 1-1. Nagasaki remain 8th, but are now only 2 points behind 6th place Oita. Tochigi stay 18th, now 8 points clear of relegation. That's everything rounded up. Next, I'll preview the weekend's fixtures with John.
Welcome back, everyone. J2 match day 38 is coming up on Saturday the 24th and Sunday the 25th of September, and John is here to help me preview those fixtures. We'll start with the Saturday games. At 2 o'clock, there's Gunma against Yamaguchi. Then at 4 o'clock, Tokyo Verdy take on Yamagata. And then two games at 7 o'clock, Nagasaki against Yokohama FC and Oita against Kofu. John, anything interesting there?
Yes, I think the first observation is we're definitely sort of summertime has officially finished, I think we can say, because we're starting to see more games kind of in the early afternoon. The kickoff's been a bit more staggered, which is good. I think the 2 p.m. game, Gunma against Yamaguchi, is big. Obviously, if Gunma can win, they extend their unbeaten run, and it'll move them further away from the chaos at the bottom. So I think they'll be confident of getting some points in that one. Verdy against Yamagata at 4 o'clock. Well, Yamagata are still well in the playoff hunt, aren't they? So that could be interesting. Yeah. And then at 7 p.m. Oita hosting Kofu. You'd expect Oita will get the 3 points there. Although, like you said, they're not the most convincing teams. That could be interesting. But I think the big game must be the Nagasaki against Yokohama FC match, right? I think Nagasaki are the seventh at the moment as we're talking right now, but they could be sixth if they win the game in hand that they've got coming up later today, in fact, I think, isn't it? It's tonight. So Nagasaki, well in the playoff hunt, although they're conceding a lot of goals recently, as you mentioned before we started recording. Yokohama FC, well, they're second, but they're not the most impressive or convincing team at times. So I think that is where attention should be focused on Saturday. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, I think Nagasaki against Yokohama FC looks most interesting for me. Nagasaki is conceding a lot recently, so I need to sort that out before the playoffs kind of slip out of their grasp. But the main one that I thought would be the most interesting, Gunma Yamaguchi, really. Gunma with that excellent result against Akita at the weekend, they've got to keep going. I've said it before about Gunma and about other teams down the bottom, one result's not enough, you've got to put results together. And as Gunma are going reasonably well at the moment, especially compared to the teams below them, they can get something here, then that will be another small step towards securing their safety. And as you mentioned it, yeah, I forgot that there are two games on Wednesday the 21st. We're actually recording Wednesday morning. So by the time this pod goes out, people will know the results of the match day 31 rearranged game between Mito and Tokyo Verdy, and match day 33, Nagasaki against Tochigi. But let's get back to match day 38. Sunday's games. At 1 o'clock, Okayama play Sendai. And then at 2 o'clock, Iwate play Kanazawa. Akita take on Machida. Jeff are against Kumamoto. And Niigata play Omiya. Then at 5 o'clock, Tokushima play Mito. And at 6 o'clock, Tochigi welcome Ryukyu. John, what do you think about those games?
Yeah, there's more intriguing games than you could shake a stick at here, aren't there? I think the one we're starting big at 1 p.m. with Okayama against Sendai, third against fifth, and obviously if things have gone wrong for Yokohama on Saturday evening away at Nagasaki, if they've failed to win that game, then obviously a win for Okayama will again close that gap on the automatic promotion places and kind of keep the pressure on the top two. But Sendai also now have got their first win, haven't they, under their new coach, Akira Ito. I know they drew against Tokushima, which wasn't the best result of the weekend, but they had a man sent off, didn't they? They were down to 10 men for much of that game. I think that's going to be intriguing. Okay, I'm a Sendai. Most of the games are at 2 o'clock, so it's difficult to pick. I think Jeff against Kumamoto. Kumamoto will probably win that game, but I think Jeff, they're not terrible this season. They could give Kumamoto some trouble. Niigata against Omiya, an orange derby, but I think Niigata will be, you know, they're top of the table for a reason. I think that they probably have too much for Omiya, although Omiya have been in reasonable form the last couple of games. And yeah, Iwate Kanazawa, well, I make Kanazawa pretty much safe. I know you're a bit less certain from your Kanazawa centric vantage point, but Iwate, they really have to go all out to win that game, don't they? I think 3 points absolutely vital for them. 5 p.m. Tokushima against Mito. Well, Tokushima is still kind of in the playoff conversation, but if they win, obviously that game's going to be a draw, but if they win, then that keeps them in the playoff kind of a frame for another round. And I think maybe, you know, we're starting with a big game at the top at 1 p.m., aren't we? Okayama Sendai, but we're finishing with a big game at the bottom. Tochi against Ryukyu. I mean, Ryukyu have to win that game. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what about you?
Yeah, anything less than a win for Ryukyu, I think, would be pretty much terminal. And Tochigi as well, not out of the woods yet. 40 points, but they lost their last two. Winners in four. So 7 points clear of Iwate, but, you know, and they've got a game in hand, which they're playing Wednesday night. But, you never know. But I picked out the same ones as you. I think Omiya have been playing well for the last little while, although they lost a couple. They played well, I think, in those games that they lost. So I don't expect them to beat Niigata, but I didn't expect them to beat Yokohama FC before, and they did. So it's not out of the realms of possibility that they could get a result in that match. Okayama Sendai, very exciting looking match there. Sendai looking to arrest their downward slide. And yeah, of course, for me, the big one, Iwate Kanazawa. I think a win there for Kanazawa would be massive. A win for Iwate would be massive for different reasons and less enjoyable for me and much less enjoyable for anyone of Ryukyu and Gunma persuasion. But I think, well, because we're right up at the end of the season now, so pretty much every game has got something on it still, which is great. And I think part of the reason for that is because the playoffs are back. So it's still got lots of teams, things to play for. And also, I don't think it's been a while since we've had a promotion race where the top two weren't kind of decided really early.
Mm.
It's still not certain. I mean, Okayama could still get into that top two.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced Yokohama are better. Don't let my son listen to this, obviously. But I'm not convinced that Yokohama are a better side than Okayama, to be honest. I know that the league table does not lie and won't lie after 42 rounds. But I think there's very little to choose between those two. So it is exciting.
Yeah, excellent. All right, so plenty to look out for this weekend. But that'll do for J2. For this episode. John, thanks very much for coming on and sharing all your thoughts and analysis.
Yeah, no probs. Always a pleasure. Hope everybody enjoys the exciting football at the weekend.
Excellent. And thanks everyone for listening. And thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. We're very grateful for your support, financial support, to keep this pod and Big Pod going. Don't go anywhere, because here comes Mike Innes with all the latest from J3 in J Talk Short Corner.
J-Talk Extra Time. Hello everyone and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on the fixtures in round 25 and the midweek catch-up game, as well as previewing the round 26 matches coming up this weekend. First, a couple of items of J3 news since the last pod. Katare Toyama say coach Nobuhiro Ishizaki has stepped down with immediate effect. The team positioned fifth in the division, 8 points off the promotion places with 9 games to play. Ishizaki took over at Katare at the start of last season, but in spite of making big-ticket signings such as J3 2021 top scorer Shota Kawanishi and FC Tokyo loanee Arthur Silva, the 64-year-old hasn't been able to mould a side to compete with the division's best. His successor has already been confirmed as Michiharu Otagiri, who's 44, previously Ishizaki's head coach and a one-club man, having held various positions on the coaching staff at Katare since 2010. Meanwhile, Azul Claro Numazu announced they've made permanent the appointment as coach of Kazuhito Mochizuki, the former head of scouting who was placed in temporary charge following the dismissal of Masataka Imai. Mochizuki managed a draw and 2 losses in his 3 games as caretaker, but nevertheless got the nod ahead of Saturday's match at home to Katare Toyama. Which brings us on to the action. Numazu against Toyama being the pick of the 3 round 25 games on Saturday the 17th of September. Azul Claro, who didn't show at all in their last match against Gainare Tottori, were far more on the front foot here. Katare keeper Genki Yamada being called into action to keep out shots by Takumi Hama and veteran Kazuki Someya back in the Numazu team for the first time since injury in April. At the other end, with Toyama desperate for the win to keep in touch with the top three, they nevertheless didn't force a save out of Hiromu Musha until just after the hour, when Yuma Matsumoto struck a first-time effort from 20 yards. In the 74th minute, though, Katane's defensive frailties let them down again as they were cut open by Kotaro Tokunaga's simple clipped pass over the top, onto which Naoki Sato ran to poke it beyond Yamada and into an empty net. Toyama did press for an equaliser in the remaining quarter of an hour, Shunta Takahashi having a couple of half chances, but it ended Numazu 1, Toyama 0, a vastly improved performance by Azul Claro under Mochizuki as their permanent coach, Katane's lacklustre and unmotivated display giving clear evidence as to why they're not among the division's elite teams, and so it proved to be Nobuhiro Ishizaki's last game in charge. Speaking of not being among the division's elite teams, FC Gifu slumped to their second loss in 4 days as they were beaten at Vanrare Hachinohe. Tomoya Ugajin, Freire and Yoshihiro Shoji were all ruled out due to suspension, and Gifu coach Yuji Yokoyama made 7 changes to the starting lineup from the side that lost at Fujieda MIFC in midweek. His team went behind in this game midway through the first half. Hachinohe bright spark Ryusei Nose swinging in across to the far post that seemingly caught out the entire visiting defence, who left Masanobu Komaki to head home unattended. Gifu did then press forward, Yuta Togashi and Toma Murata both drawing good saves from Kazuki Hattori before the break, and 17 minutes after the restart, Gifu drew level, substitute Kosuke Fujioka prodding in from close range after Vanrare had failed to deal with a Yosuke Kashiwagi free kick. Kashiwagi hitting the post with a later set piece was the nearest Gifu came to going in front, but in the 72nd minute, disaster struck when Nose chested down a long ball, cut inside Daisuke Kikuchi and curled a 20-yard shot beyond the reach of Kazushige Kirihata. And it was game over 6 minutes later, Yusei Kayanuma setting up Aoi Sato to drive an angled shot inside Kirihata's far post. Final score, Hachinohe 3, Gifu 1. Vanarare climbed to third bottom after ending a run of 3 straight defeats, while for Gifu, their aspirations and reality remain far apart. Two of the division's strugglers, YSCC Yokohama and Kamatamari Sanuki, met at Mitsuzawa in the day's other fixture, dominated by Kamatamari, who got the ball in the net early on through Kakeru Aoto, only for it to be ruled out for handball. That was the nearest we came to a goal, the home side toothless, despite the full debut of Loris Tinelli, their recent signing from Luxembourg. Final score, YSCC 0, Senuki 0. A welcome clean sheet for YSCC, regarding which mention must be made of captain Kento Dodate reverting to a role in the back three. For Kamatamare, the unusual experience of being in control of a game, but they couldn't make their superiority count. Extra time. There were scheduled to be 6 matches on Sunday the 18th, but the typhoon over Kyushu led to the postponement of Kagoshima United against Giromansk Kitakyushu and Tegevajano Miyazaki against Ehime FC. As I record, there's no information yet on a new date for the latter, but Kagoshima against Kitakyushu was quickly arranged for Monday the 19th, so I'll cover that one shortly. Still some crucial results among the Sunday games that did take place, though not least a stumble on their march to the title for Iwaki FC, who suffered a rare loss at FC Imabari. In very wet and windy conditions at the Arigato Service Yume Stadium, Iwaki almost took the lead 5 minutes before half-time when Masaru Hidaka's drive deflected off Marcus Indio and onto the bar, with homekeeper Shu Mogi beaten. But Imabari took the points via the best move of the game, a 50th-minute counter-attack which ended in Kazuki Nakagawa's low ball into the box being beautifully flicked on by Indio for Yuta Mikado to fire into the bottom corner from 15 yards. Final score, Imabari 1, Iwaki 0. Kazuaki Hashikawa's Imabari 9 points off the promotion places with 9 games remaining. It's the longest of shots, longer than Toyama, but this win keeps their hopes alive. Iwaki remain in control of their own destiny, but is the pressure starting to tell? That defeat for Iwaki means Matsumoto Yamaga closed the gap between them to a single point thanks to their home win over Gainare Tottori. With Ayumu Yokoyama still out of the Yamaga side, Lukao was partnered up front by Ren Komatsu, and it was Komatsu who gave Matsumoto the lead in the 11th minute, escaping marker Junya Suzuki to head home Yota Shimokawa's cross. Tottori almost equalised soon afterwards, Daichi Ishikawa's speculative long-range shot deceiving homekeeper Victor, but rebounding off the woodwork. After that, it was Lukao who took centre stage in the 29th minute, making it 2-0 after Gainare keeper Ken Tajiri misjudged Yusuke Kikui's high through pass, leaving the big Brazilian to roll it into an empty net. But early in the second half, Lukao scored an own goal, getting his bearings all wrong as he tried to defend a Hiroto Sese corner and heading it inside the far post. Final score, Matsumoto 2, Tottori 1. 5 straight wins now for Hiroshi Nanami's Yamaga, a run which has coincided with Lukao taking up a position in the starting lineup and proving himself to be a team player as well as a goal threat. Gainare stay fifth bottom but are developing into a more competitive proposition. The main story of Fujieda My FC against SC Sagamihara is of the home side overcoming disciplinary challenges to grind out the win and so keep in touch at the top. Two regular starters, Keisuke Ogasawara and Jun Suzuki, were suspended for the game, and in the 35th minute, Takashi Akiyama was given a straight red card for a professional foul on Sagamihara's Yuan Matsuhashi, who otherwise would have been through on goal. By that time, MyFC were already in front, Tojiro Kubo having scored in the 11th minute when he found space in the area and drove a powerful shot past Kentaro Kakoi. Sagamihara had their chances to equalise, Shogo Nakahara sending in a glancing header that prompted a good save from Kei Uchiyama, and Jungo Fujimoto putting a shot round the post when he was one-on-one with the home keeper. Final score, Fujieda 1, Sagamihara 0, a gutsy display by Daisuke Sudo's MyFC, who rode their luck at times but remain in the promotion game thanks to Kubo's incisive shooting. Another flaky performance from Sagamihara, who remain fourth bottom in the standings. In the mid-table encounter between AC Nagano Parseiro and Fukushima United, it was the visitors who picked up the win via the only goal of a low-key game. Shoki Nagano taking advantage of some hesitancy from Parseiro keeper Issei Oichi to finish off Hiroki Higuchi's cross at the far post. That was midway through the second half, and in the 75th minute, Oichi pulled off an excellent point-blank save from a header by Hiroshi Omori to keep Nagano in it. The best showing from the home side had been early on when Hiroki Yamamoto had a goal chalked off for a clear offside, and it ended Nagano 0, Fukushima 1. Parseiro now 3 without a win, and despite the best efforts of Yuki Stauff, their season looks to be petering out. Encouragement for Toshihiro Hattori and his squad, with a late cameo too from Hiroshi Yoshinaga, his first appearance of the year after injury in pre-season. Finally, in round 25, Kagoshima United eventually hosted Giravants Kitakyushu on Monday the 19th. They did so knowing a win would see them move to within a point of Iwaki, and although Kitakyushu had a Yosuke Kamigata goal disallowed for offside in the first 90 seconds and went on to have the better of a quiet opening period, in the third minute of stoppage time, Frank Romero gave Kagoshima a priceless lead, stabbing home the rebound after Kenya Onodera had headed Junki Goryo's corner against the bar. The second half was hardly packed with scoring opportunities either, although Giramants did have another goal chalked off, quite the week for it. This time Takeaki Homura's overhead kick disallowed for dangerous play, and so it ended Kagoshima 1, Kitakyushu 0. The home side hold on to second place and the promotion race becomes that bit more compressed. Giravants remain 13th, now 5 1-0 losses in their last 6 matches. Just to mention the rescheduled round 20 game on Wednesday the 21st, which saw Fujieda go to Numazu for a Shizuoka derby. For the second time in 4 days, MyFC had a player sent off early on, this time captain Nobuyuki Kawashima in only the 8th minute, dismissed for a dogso on Kazuki Someya. Fujieda's ex-Numazu forward Ryo Watanabe had a couple of attempts, most notably in the 29th minute when he caught Yuya Tsukegi in possession and sent in a shot that caused Hiromu Musha to dive low to his right and tip it onto the post. Watanabe looked the most likely player to score in the 72nd minute, a glancing header from Akiyuki Yokoyama's free kick, again drawing a good save from Musha. But it ended Numazu 0, Fujieda 0. The problem for Kazuhito Mochizuki pretty plain. His Azul Claro side here reverted to type after the win over Toyama, struggling mightily to create chances, while for Daisuke Sudo, My FC could overcome one early sending off, but not two in a row, and they drop points as a result. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 25 and the midweek catch-up game, noting that Ehime and Miyazaki have a game in hand. The top six teams are Iwaki with 54 points, Kagoshima and Matsumoto with 53, Fujieda 49, Toyama 45 and Imabari 44. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are, in 15th, Sagamihana with 23 points, then it's Hachinohe with 22, Saneki 20, and bottom with 15, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 26 fixtures over the weekend, when there are two big games on Saturday the 24th of September. Second placed Kagoshima go to Tottori. Fourth placed Fujieda continue their jam-packed schedule with a tough match at Ehime. The other seven matches are on Sunday the 25th. Home games for Kagoshima's closest rivals, Iwaki against Gifu, Matsumoto against YSCC. Two of the chasing pack are in the Last Chance Saloon. Under new management, Toyama go to Saneki, Imabari are at Miyazaki. And elsewhere, Nagano are at home to Numazu, Fukushima host Kitakyushu, and two of the bottom four meet at Sagamihara, where the visitors are Hachinohe. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.